7.7 and 106 FM.
Streaming on the Prime Media Plus app
and on DSTV channel 856.
It's 12:06 on the Midday Report. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Human Rights Day edition of the Midday Report. My name is Khomotso Modise and I'm in for Mandy Wiener. Quite a packed show that we have prepared for you for the next hour. President Cyril Ramaphosa is in Sharpeville today and he's delivering the keynote address at the official commemorative event. He's actually just started speaking. Human settlement MEC Lemogang Maile is leading a delegation at the Diepkloof Hostel where we saw those violent demonstrations this week, and we'll also be taking you to a solidarity pilgrimage that's happening in the city of Cape Town, where individuals from churches in Cape Town are marching for peace on the Gaza Strip. Now, we're also expecting a conversation a little later in the show, and I'm looking forward to that one about positive masculinity and human rights. It's a rare combination. We seldom hear those terms together in one sentence, but we'll be having that conversation later on in the show. That's the Midday Report for the next hour or so. If you want to weigh in on our conversation, send us a WhatsApp on 702 at 072-702-1702. In Cape Town, it's 072-567-1567.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
So it's pretty quiet everywhere in the country. It's Human Rights Day, everyone on holiday mode, but it's quiet everywhere except in Sharpeville. Political parties are present there, clearly represented by their leaders there. And President Cyril Ramaphosa is delivering his keynote address at that commemorative event. Let's take a listen to what he's saying.
Ke tla bua ka senyesemane. Ka hobane batho hohle hohle South Africa mona ba mametse ntho e re tla e buang mona. Jwale je ka le tseba a re bue dipuo tse tshwanang. Jwale ha o e beha ka senyesemane le bao ba dulang hole hole kwana ba khona ukwa ba latele ntho e re bua e hlile ba bang ba bona ba teng mona ne e tla ba ntho e ntle haholo ha eba ne re le bang fela re bua ka Sesotho se tibileng se monate. 64 years have passed since the ground on which we gather here in Sharpeville bore witness and testimony to one of the worst atrocities committed by the apartheid regime against the people of South Africa. And although many decades have passed, we still remember with great sorrow and pain the 69 people who were murdered and many more who were injured and maimed as they protested in peace against the grave injustices that were imposed upon them. Le bao ba maloko a bao ba re sileng ha ke batani ma mahlong ke bone hore bohloko bono bo ntse bo le teng laeba dikeledi a di a rotha empa ne ke bona hore ka nnete bohloko bo ntse bo le teng ntho ena e ileng ya ba hlahela ka 1960.
That That's President Cyril Ramaphosa out in Sharpeville. And he's, you know, many people speak about how charming he is. And that's exactly what he's doing there to the people of Sharpeville, I think. He's speaking there in Sesotho, saying, meaning we're speaking deep Sesotho, right? It is a Sesotho speaking area, that Sharpeville area. And he's really just introducing the commemorative event and reminding the people of Sharpeville what happened there. Of course, that massacre, claiming the lives of 69 people. Now, we'll be keeping tabs on the president's address. I think we'll pop in and out of it as we get a chance. He does seem to be cracking a bit of jokes also with the people there in or at that event. We saw Gauteng Premier Panyaza Lesufi very visibly entertained by whatever the president said a little earlier. But that is President Cyril Ramaphosa there out in Sharpeville.
Your voice.
Your station. Let's walk the talk.
702.
So speaking of Panyaza Lesufi, he was out in Sharpeville as well, and he laid the foundation, or prepared the crowd for the address by the president. He spoke a little earlier. Let's take a listen to what he had to say.
On the 6th of April, here in Gauteng, we are announcing the biggest skills development ever seen in our country. We are saying to young people that are unemployed in the townships, we are saying to young people that are unemployed in the informal settlement, we are saying to young people that are unemployed in the hostels, whether you are under 35 or over 35, whether you're qualified or not qualified, on the 6th of April, we are looking for you. We want you to train you, whether you want to be a bricklayer, you want to be an electrician, you want to be a welder, you want to be an artisan, wazagiti. We will train you, and the government that has the opportunity to lead will be in a position to give you a stipend. President, this is the biggest skills revolution ever in our country. Ningzwile man. Itingiphinde. What you are saying, from the 6th of April, if you are unemployed, tell us what you want to be. The government that I have the honor to lead will train you. While you are training you, will give you a stipend of 3,500 so that you can be in a position to be. Sipispan.
If you'd forgotten that it's an election year, listen, you don't have to look very far, because, I mean, there we have the Premier at, a government event. They're basically campaigning there for the ANC, and we were expecting that to happen. We know that this is the opportunities that will be taken. The Nasispani being, you know, chanted and shouted there in that area. You know, I really hope that the people of Vereeniging and the surroundings are able to show government officials the realities of their lives there. Because having covered Sharpeville as a journalist myself, I can tell you now that that place is one of the places in our province that is terribly neglected. The potholes are absolutely horrible. The cemetery in that area where the wreath laying that the president had a little earlier, it's called the Pelindaba Cemetery, goes completely unattended until the Sharpeville commemoration. I truly hope that they can, you know, point them to these problems in that area. But I don't know. What do you make of what Premier Panyaza Lesufi had to say to the people there? It's clear politicking, or as Tidi Madia would say, politricking out there in Sharpeville.
Because this journey is better taken together.
Let's walk the talk. 702.
So very interesting scenes out in Sharpeville today, because not only is the president and the premier out there at the official event, but we're also seeing opposition political parties there joining forces. And I mean, I was, you know, checking on social media, and the pictures and the scenes that are there are really powerful. These are political parties that sometimes differ ideologically, joining forces there today, having a counter event, a counter human rights event out there in Sharpeville. Now, those political parties include Action SA, and their leader, Herman Mashaba, is out there. We also saw Build One South Africa leader, Musi Maimane, out there, as well as the leader of the African Congress of Transformation, and that's Ace Magashule. They're standing together and almost singing in unison together in Sharpeville. Joining us now, though, to tell us about their event that they are having there is the leader of Action SA, Herman Mashaba. Dr. Mashaba, thank you so much for joining us. I am interested in what you're doing out there today. It does seem like a counter event to what government is hosting in Sharpeville.
Well, good afternoon, and good afternoon to the listeners. You know, today for me, as Herman Mashaba, as the leader of Action SA, deeply touched by seeing political parties where on a daily basis we've got very divergent, different ideologies in terms of how we want to fix South Africa. But today, this day, actually united us as South Africans, and we put our differences aside, with the exception of the ANC, which we actually quite surprised, because the last few years they never showed up, and today showed up using state resources. I've just listened to the premier right now addressing the residents of Sharpeville. Actually, honestly, it's insulting them, because he's the man just going around making wild promises when the country is in big trouble. Very embarrassed when we got to the memorial site where we see the president putting red carpet for him on a day that is actually quite really sad for the people of our country. Mm. But I think for me, deeply touched by the spirit, I experienced working with some of the parties for the first time. I found myself next to Ace Magashule.
Yes, I was about to ask you about that. You know, and you're speaking to Komotso Modise, right here. I did hear a little earlier, you're referring to me as Mpo. I was really interested. Yes, it's really...
I found it really very, very interesting, because at the end of the day, I said to myself, Herman, you know what, this is not about direct politics. It's about all of us as South Africans, because no one owns this day. This day belongs to all people of this country. Yes, we know in 1960 the PAC under Robert Sobukwe is the one that led this. But Robert Sobukwe did not really do this for narrow political interests. Yeah. He was doing this for South Africa. And I think for me it was interesting. As I say, for me, for the first time to see myself side by side with Ace Magashule, someone I've never had a chance to meet him before, and I found myself on the same stage with him, really facilitated by the PAC and ASAP, and I really give them credit for that.
Yes, I mean, Mr. Mashaba, it is an election year, and we can't ignore the fact that you have spoken out very openly and strongly against corruption, yet there you are standing next to a man who's accused of corruption. What should South Africans make of that?
Well, I think you know, if people are really concerned, and as all of us are concerned about corruption, from time to time we find ourselves, I find myself on numerous occasions next to the president of the country, the man who, according to Fraser, has got $12 million in his mattress. So now, obviously, I think it's in an event where it's a public event, honestly, I don't think it is my right to charge. I don't really own the law enforcement agencies to charge Ace Magashule, and for me to be there with him on the same stage, invited by other political parties, would really be myopic of me. It would really be honestly irresponsible to refuse to stand on a day that is really so important, to stand side by side with fellow South Africans to say this is a sad day for us as South Africans.
Now, you were standing next to other political parties, members of the PAC as well as Build One South Africa. Could this be an indication of the parties that you may or may not be considering working with or partnering with post-elections?
I think today is not a day for thinking about whether we're going to be long-term working with them, because some of the parties you saw us with, in terms of our economic policies, in terms of our racial profiling, unfortunately, it's not the same. But that does not really mean that on a day like this, I will be ashamed. In fact, it makes me really very proud when I can stand in front of fellow South Africans to say, this day, 1960, it's unacceptable. You know, I said to the crowds at the gravesite that, you know, I grew up, I remember when I started school in 1960 until I was at university. This day, every single day, the apartheid government was against us recognizing this day. I can tell you, this was part of us. 21st of March, we knew it was the day for all of us in our communities, in our schools. Mm. It's a day that we used to commemorate. And it's good for us as South Africans to commemorate, as all of us South Africans.
Yeah. That's Herman Mashaba there, Action SA leader. Thank you so much for joining us, sir. They are out in Sharpeville, out there together with other opposition party leaders. And it really is a parallel or a counter, human rights event that they're hosting them. But leader of Build One South Africa, that's Musi Maimane, is also out in Sharpeville. And he's been speaking there. Let's take a listen to what he's had to say.
Amansa! Amansa! I want to say to the president, the PAC, today none shall never forget the spirit of Robert Sobukwe. Forward the spirit of Robert Sobukwe. We stand here today across multiple parties and say the blood that was spilled here shall never be forgotten, as the outgoing president wants to expropriate it for themselves. We need time. Amanda! We stand here today saying, on that day when the police took it upon the people to gun them down for human rights, they did so in Marikana. They did so in Langa. Today, they are watching as 73 South Africans are being killed every day. We are saying there shall never be human rights until every life is saved in South Africa. We stand.
That sound courtesy of Newsroom Africa, and that's Musi Maimane, leader of Build One South Africa. He's a part of the opposition parties that are there having their event and commemorating Human Rights Day in Sharpeville.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
That's right. This is the Midday Report, and I am Komoto Modise in for Mandy Wiener. Quite a bit that we're covering today around Human Rights Day. It is, of course, the main story of the day, and politicians are out and about in Sharpeville. It's very busy there, but politicians are also in other parts of the province, in Gauteng, where we've been seeing tensions this week. In fact, in Diepkloof, Soweto, we saw really violent demonstrations breaking out there by the residents of the Diepkloof Hospital. And our reporter, Veronica Makhwadi, is there, and she joins us now live. Veronica, just tell us why politicians, or at least the MEC for Human Settlements, Lebogang Maile, is back there today, because they were there earlier in the week when there was the protest, right?
That's absolutely correct, Komoto. MEC Lebogang Maile for Humans, or the MEC for Human Settlements, is back here. And he's not alone. He's brought with him Joburg Mayor Gabela Gwamanda, as he promised when he met with residents on Wednesday, well, Tuesday rather, in regards to addressing the issues of the housing crisis in the Diepkloof Hostel. Now, Komoto, you would know, of course, that we have, as Eyewitness News, covered the kind of issues and especially the protests that happen around this hostel in regards to their calling for electricity, they're calling for water, and now, Komoto, the issue is the crumbling state of the houses that they live in. While Joburg Mayor Gabela Gwamanda has once again come face to face with residents to essentially understand the squalid conditions that many residents here have had to endure for decades, he has promised from the city side, working with the provincial government, to expedite the issue of turning essentially Joburg hospitals around, not just this one, and ensuring that they are no longer, as one would say, Khumutso, the remnants of the apartheid era, as we remember that these were the living conditions that were built around the 1970s. So as you say, it is a busy day, but as some South Africans are obviously enjoying Human Rights Day, residents here are simply demanding for their rights.
Maybe, Veronica, just really quickly, so what happens now? Because I do know that in that area, the hostels had been built a few years ago, and I'm sure you've seen the structures that seem newer than the hostels where many are living. And there's now this promise of prioritizing refurbishments again, yet many have questioned, saying you failed to consult with the people there locally, and that's why we're in this mess.
Absolutely, Khumutso. I think one of the big issues that the mayor touched on today is the fact that the housing crisis in Joburg, and I think in the Gauteng province at large, is an issue of how to, essentially put together the living spaces. Some houses are RDP homes, others are hostels. Other residents are calling for a plot of land to be provided by government, and then they can build their own structures. So essentially what the mayor is saying is that they need to find a comprehensive plan that involves the provincial government and finding out what is the best way forward. It seems obviously the approach of doing RDP houses hasn't in fact helped Johannesburg's housing crisis. If anything, our backlog continues to grow and grow year after year. So what we are hoping to get as well from this meeting that is happening, I can tell you that the Joburg mayor has also met with leaders of the community, is to actually hear what residents need for themselves and essentially hopefully hear from the Joburg mayor how they plan to implement this with actual timelines on addressing this housing crisis.
All right, Veronica Makhwadi out there in Deep Kloof in Soweto, where the MEC for Human Settlements, that is Lebogang Maile, has been spending the morning.
Because this journey is better taken together.
Let's walk the talk. 702.
Welcome back. It's the Human Rights Day edition of the Midday Report. My name is Khumutso Modise, and I'm in for Mandy Wiener right here on the Midday Report on 702 and Cape Talk. We're taking your WhatsApps on 072-702-1702. And if you're in Cape Town, it's 072-567-1567. Let's move over to a story in Cape Town, actually. And we've been seeing a march today in the streets of Cape Town. It's called a Solidarity Pilgrimage. And it's taking place where demonstrators are calling for the end of the conflict in Gaza. Now, that's called a ceasefire pilgrimage. And it's been organized by individuals from various churches and Christian organizations. Our reporter, Carlo Peterson, is there, and he joins us now live. Carlo, hi. This walk has been taking place from 7 a.m. this morning, I understand. And it's been moving even along the coast in Muizenberg. What's been happening there?
Good afternoon, Khumutso. Yes, so we've seen people from all walks of life come together for this Cape Town Gaza ceasefire pilgrimage. It's a hot, sunny day in Cape Town today, and there are just over 100 people who are braving the high temperatures on this walk, which of course is from started in Simonstown and ends in the Cape Town CBD. The distance is, of course, about 41 kilometers in length, which is the same length as the Gaza Strip. Now, this is a global event, Khumutso, and the Cape Town leg of the pilgrimage has been organized, like you said, by individuals from various churches and Christian organizations. We spoke to some of them, and what they are saying is they have been touched by what is happening in Gaza, the displacement and killing of people there. They say they stand in solidarity with those people in Gaza, and they are calling for a permanent ceasefire. We spoke to Reverend of the Uniting Reformed Church, Llewellyn McMaster, and he had this to say.
So it is to send out the message that, yes, we have our own challenges in South Africa, because people play it off, you know, why for Gaza, and what about the Cape Flats killings and all that. For me, it's not a question of or, it's and. As faith communities, we need to have, I always say, multifocal lenses, you know, zooming into what's here for us, important, but also at the same time keeping our eyes on the human race and humanity in large.
Right, Carlo Peterson out there in Cape Town at that march. It's called the Ceasefire Pilgrimage, and the march has been happening since 7 a.m. this morning. Carlo will continue to keep us updated on that march in EWN.
Your voice.
Your station. Let's walk the talk.
702.
702.
So Trade Union Federation KwaSatu is also commemorating Human Rights Day, and they have quite a lengthy statement that they've released. Very interesting points that are being made there. And I think that, you know, a lot of what's being said there, many of us are either aware of. These are issues around workers' rights, and these are a part of KwaSatu's mandate. Here to talk us through that is Matthew Parks, and he is KwaSatu's acting national spokesperson. Matthew, maybe you can just start us off with what exactly you are commemorating as KwaSatu this year on Human Rights Day.
Hi, thanks for having us. Look, I mean, it's a challenge just to reflect on the gains we have made. And, you know, despite all of our irritations in life, and that's part of democracy, we recognize we have made many achievements since 1994. We have a progressive constitution, and it doesn't justify human rights as the kind of the narrow political right of going to elections, freedom of speech, and so forth, but also actually says that human rights includes socioeconomic rights. The right to education, the right to transport, the right to housing, the right to electricity, water, and so forth. And so for us, those are quite important. We also appreciate that in the Constitution and in our laws, workers' rights are also enshrined. The right to form a trade union, to collective bargaining. Apologies for the motorcyclist who just drove past.
Sure.
And he also has the right to make his noise as well. So workers have the right to work in a safe environment, the right to equal pay for equal work, the ban on discrimination whether on race or gender, the right to overtime, like paid maternity leave, yeah. Paid parental leave, minimum wage, and so on. But the many achievements, we often, you know, we get used to them and we just take this for granted. At times there are challenges around implementation, because you can have good laws on paper, but, you know, many workers will struggle to exercise the rights, partly because of the high unemployment rate and so forth, or just abuse of employers. So it's a chance to appreciate that, but also to say we have much more work that needs to be done. Some areas we're not doing as well as we should have.
Sure.
How do we improve it? And I think that's also equally critical as well.
You speak about the CEOs of mining, financial and retail giants earning hundreds of thousands daily, yet mine workers, bank tellers and cashiers will be lucky to earn that even in a year. But that still remains the situation. I mean, we still, to this day, even outside of the pay disparities, we still have alarmingly high numbers of mine deaths. I mean, it's surely worrying.
No, it's extremely. In fact, some workers are not even in a career what these CEOs earn in a single year. And, you know, we have a free market economy where most of the essential needs of life, whether it's housing, electricity, whether it's water, transport, food, they all require you to have a salary. And it's very difficult for people to buy those essential needs of life if they're paid barely enough to qualify to pay income tax. Yet you have the same CEOs in the very same company. Sure, different jobs, that's fine. But surely we can afford to pay people a living wage, not just pay them a slave wage. Because otherwise, you know, you will struggle just to provide food for your children. And you can see the implications. Look at some of the reports of stunted child growth, workers not physically able to perform their work because they just don't have the food that the body physically requires. So we've got to move to a more equal society, not saying that, you know, some naive pie-in-the-sky dream, but we can afford to pay people a living wage, especially if you have a CEO of a mining company making 300 million rand in a single year, yet he wants to argue with mine workers over an additional 150 rand in a single month.
Well, that's KwaSatu's Matthew Parks. He's the acting national spokesperson there, running us through their statement and their release for Human Rights Day today, really highlighting a lot of what they stand for as a trade union federation.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
So I've really been looking forward to this conversation, the next conversation on human rights and positive masculinity. And I'm looking forward to it because, as I said in the intro, that's not a conversation, or rather, these are terms that you usually hear, but you hear them really apart, never together, right? Positive masculinity and human rights, what do the two have to do with each other? Well, we've got someone here who is going to tell us, and that's the CEO and founder of an organization called Father of a Nation. And his name is Craig Wilkinson. Stevenson. He joins us now live. Craig, I'm interested in the link that you have drawn as an organization between human rights and positive masculinity. What's that about?
Thank you. Well, if you think about it, rights and obligations are two sides of the same coin. I can only enjoy my rights to safety, for instance, if fellow citizens fulfill their obligations to treat me with respect and dignity. And the vast majority of gender-based violence and murders in this country and many other violations of human rights are perpetrated by men not fulfilling their obligation to treat people with safety. For instance, gender-based violence. A man marries a woman. He has a sacred obligation to treat her with respect and to be a safe space for her in every way. Now, men who grow up wounded and damaged with a false notion of what it means to be a man and a false concept about the value of woman are unlikely to fulfill that obligation and therefore violate the human rights of others. So there's a very strong link between the two.
And how do you suggest masculinity can be used in the advancement of human rights?
Well, true and authentic and healthy masculinity is a beautiful gift to humanity. It loves, it serves, it honors, it protects, it provides, it stands against what's wrong, it stands for what's right. So by teaching and fathering and training boys to be good men, who are good fathers, mentors, role models, partners, we are automatically going to create a society which is safe and prosperous for all. And that's the link, and that's what we need to do.
What does your organization actually do for the advancement of human rights?
Well, we work with men and women, mostly with men, because we address fatherlessness, which is a major cause of social ills throughout the world, and this is very highly documented and well tracked. And with men, in terms of overcoming and combating gender-based violence, so we run a variety of programs: schools, universities, colleges, in taverns, in communities, in parastatal organizations, training and equipping men to be good men and good fathers, and also training and helping women to get out of abusive situations, to not accept abuse in any form, manner, or way.
So it all comes down to education, I suppose.
Well, more than, yeah, education is a very key part of it. You know, boys need to be taught how to be good men, and they need that to be modeled to them by older men. But it's also emotional woundedness. You know, wounded men become men who wound. And no boy's born an abuser, no boy's born a misogynist or a racist. These are things that happen on the journey from boy to man. And so that vital journey needs to be managed very well. And the boy needs to be, just as well as girls, but it manifests in different ways, raised whole, emotionally whole, and with an understanding of what it means to be a good man.
Yeah, thank you so much. That's Craig Wilkinson, their CEO of founder and founder of Father of a Nation, speaking about the link between positive masculinity and human rights.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
That's right. This is the Midday Report. It's the Human Rights Day edition of the Midday Report with me, Khomotso Modise. I'm in for Mandy Wiener, and we're on 702 and Cape Talk. We are taking your contributions, WhatsApp voice notes, and WhatsApps on 072-702-1702. We're also taking your contributions from Cape Talk on 072-567-1567. As I said, it is Human Rights Edition, so everything is around human rights. That is the main story today. And President Cyril Ramaphosa is there in Sharpeville. He's been delivering his keynote address, and he says we must continue to implement policies of triple BEE. There's a lot in his address that's very interesting, almost taking this opportunity to tell the people of Sharpeville what his government has done for them and what they promised to do post-elections. But having driven through Sharpeville myself, I've been saying that, you know, the people of Sharpeville don't need people to come make promises. They need the president to just be driven around the Vereeniging area to see how shocking the streets look. They need the president to be taken to the Pelindaba Cemetery when it hasn't been prepared for this commemorative event like today. They need the president to be taken to cemeteries that have turned into dumping sites because they've just been neglected in that area. They need to give him a glass of water and so he can taste just how bad the quality in parts of Vereeniging the water is. That's what needs to happen on Human Rights Day. And while these mass events are the order of the day, I don't think that's what needs to happen there in Sharpeville.
Because this journey is better taken together.
Let's walk the talk. 702.
All right, it is a conversation that is rather interesting. Amnesty International also taking the time to highlight some infringements of human rights. A statement here saying no one should be killed fighting for basic human rights. And they are choosing to highlight the plight of a group called Abahlali Basemjondolo. They are a group of shack dwellers. It's a movement which campaigns for land, housing and dignity. And today, Amnesty International really speaking about the challenges for the activists of Abahlali Basemjondolo, some losing their lives and some in hiding. And joining us for that conversation is Cassandra Dorisimi, and she's from Amnesty International. She's a campaigner there. Good afternoon, Cassandra.
Good afternoon, Khumotso, and thank you for having me.
So you're choosing today to highlight the challenges of Abahlali Basemjondolo, but specifically a young man named Thapelo Mohapi, who's your general secretary, who you say is in hiding and is facing threats because of his activism.
Yes, so Thapelo Mohapi was one of our global Right for Rights campaign individuals. And we chose to highlight him specifically, as you say, because he faces threats. And because he's in hiding because of these threats, and because the movement as a whole has faced these threats and attacks over the past many years that they've been on the ground. And in 2022 alone, they lost three of their members who were killed in the Ekinana commune in Etiquini. So we are highlighting the plight of Thapelo, and we are asking the government to do more to protect human rights defenders. As we reflect on Human Rights Day, like we've been speaking about today, there are many challenges that we still have with access to water, sanitation, housing. And we are really reflecting on those who defend human rights and the need for them to be safe in doing so, as is their right under international law.
Do we know who's posing a threat on Thapelo's life?
We are calling on the government to ensure that investigations are continue efficiently and effectively to make sure that the people who are posing these threats are brought to book for Thapelo and for all human rights defenders.
And just talk to me about the work that you're doing with Abahlali Basemjondolo. I can imagine that are you involved in any work with police, particularly around protecting people like Thapelo?
Yes, so as Amnesty, we were able to provide some relief to Thapelo to ensure his protection as best we can. But we're also calling for systemic change because we can assist on individual case-by-case basis, but there's a need for government intervention. And we're specifically proposing legislation that protects human rights defenders. And for this legislation to come about in consultation with people like Thapelo and Abahlali and other human rights defenders who are at risk, so that the legislation and interventions that government takes to protect them are informed by their lived experiences. So we need a more systemic response to what's happening.
In your statement, you speak about members of Abahlali losing their lives. Do we know, do we have numbers around how many and where these people are?
Yes. So Abahlali say that they have lost 24 members in their movement over the past many years. And in 2022 alone, there were three, as I mentioned, in Ekinana commune in Etiquini, KZN. Many of the killings have happened in KZN. And that's, as we know, that's a hot spot for political violence. So, yes, that's primarily where we see these killings occurring.
One may be asking why these killings would be happening. Would this because of the work of Abahlali in ensuring housing and land for the people? What are the motivations behind these killings?
Precisely. So with the protection of human rights defenders, we see human rights defenders like Abahlali and Thapelo come under attack because of their activism and because of their work to protect human rights. Each situation is different. So, for example, with Mamfikileng Changase, who was assassinated in 2020, it was a different situation. It was around still around land and climate justice, but it was her activism in that specific community that led to her assassination. So, like we're saying, each situation is context specific, but there needs to be a systemic response in the form of legislation and national protection mechanisms. And South Africa is a signatory to the UN Declaration on Human Rights Defenders, which proposes a set of resolutions to ensure that human rights defenders are protected in a very specific way, because we know that the right to life in general in South Africa is a concern. We have about 75 people murdered every day, and the criminal justice system needs to be strengthened to ensure that there's justice for each and every individual that is killed, but also specifically for human rights defenders who, because of their work, come under direct fire.
And what particularly or specifically in our law are you suggesting needs to be amended or changed to address these killings?
So South Africa doesn't have any policy or legislation that recognizes human rights defenders and their work. And as a starting point, we need something that specifically does that. We also need government officials to create a context that is conducive for human rights defenders to conduct their work. The Special Rapporteur on Human Rights Defenders, based at the UN, conducted some research showing that the remarks that officials make, for example, how they speak about human rights defenders and civil society, makes a huge impact on the context in which they're working. And if we get negative remarks from higher ups, then we create a negative context for human rights defenders, and that fuels the threats and attacks and assassinations.
All right, we're going to leave it there. That's Cassandra Durasamy, and she's a campaigner for Amnesty International South Africa, speaking to the deaths as well as the human rights violations of activists like Thapelo Mohapi, General Secretary of Abahlali baseMjondolo, who's currently in hiding, facing threats because of his activism.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
Of course, it is the human rights edition of the Midday Report, and we can't wrap it up without a bit of music that speaks to human rights. It's Letambulu with Not Yet Uhuru. Brings us to the end of the Human Rights edition of the Midday Report with me, Khumutso Modise, in for Mandy Wiener. Thank you so much for listening to us. Remember, the 69 people who lost their lives in Sharpeville, it was not in vain. Today we've got democracy, and we hope that we can continue to embrace it. It is 1 o'clock, and we do this again tomorrow. But for now, goodbye.